Are you NCARB certified yet? Join the network of over 45,000 architects who have the NCARB certificate to expand your professional reach.
By becoming NCARB certified, like I did, you are demonstrating that you've met the national standards for licensure, a qualification that can be an important factor for firms when hiring and promoting. Certificate holders have a streamlined path to apply for a reciprocal license in all 55 U.S. jurisdictions, as well as access to an extensive library of free continuing education courses.
Learn more at ncarb.org.
The beginning of the first season is always so rough because it's like riding a bicycle, like even just researching, man.
I know.
Yeah. My attention span has gotten worse.
All right. I'm jazz fingered. I'm ready.
Okay. So hands. Okay. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Hey there, and welcome to season 7 of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time. This season, we are having a wild card theme. Every season, our ladies usually have something in common, whether it was their industry, i.e. academia, or that they were from international countries, what have you. But this season, we are going to tell the stories of ladies because we just thought it was cool and necessary to share. So I want to say that this wildcard season, there are no rules, but of course we need the bumpers to keep us on track. So true to every season, all of the stories that we share are of ladies that have passed away and somehow or some way they have impacted or influenced the design and construction field. So wildcard season, season 7, let's go. Ladies, how are we feeling?
Feeling good.
So excited.
Woo!
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so thankful that we're back. Thank you guys. Yeah. Thank you everyone for listening and coming back.
All right. So this week we are going to talk about Sylvia Harris, who was a graphic designer and design strategist who was behind some large scale programs in the US, who is also known to be a pioneer of social design. So for the record, for those that are new, I'm Jessica Rogers getting ready for a shrimp and grits dinner with the parentals based out of Miami, Florida.
Hey there, I'm Lizzie Rahr heading to a girls' night in San Francisco.
And I'm Nurjiti Rivas about to have some chicken noodle soup because I'm sick from Houston, Texas.
Mm. I'm sorry you're sick, but that sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now for our disclaimer. The three of us are not historians, nor are we experts on this subject. We're just sharing stories about the information we find about each of these women. If we get our facts a little mixed up, please forgive us. Leave us a comment and we'll all continue learning together.
All right, so our story begins in 1953 in Richmond, Virginia. Sylvia Harris was born, and her father was a women's sports coach. He was considered to be legendary. His name was Tricky Tom Harris, and her mother was an artist and an art teacher.
Tricky Tom? I mean, like, sorry. First off, that name just really made me laugh. But why is he tricky? I feel like that nickname makes me skeptical and untrusting of him. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's going to trick me. And why is he legendary?
I know, right? I feel like that's not something to write home about.
Tricky exactly. Tom. Tricky Tom.
Mm-mm.
I don't think Tricky was a bad nickname. He was actually.
Well, I hope
a
not, but I'm
cool
just wondering what it is.
Yeah. I just thought it was like Tricky some rhymes with Tom or whatever. Like, not rhymes, but like the alliteration of it. And anyway, guy was legendary. He was an icon. Tom Tricky Harris, he was actually the basketball coach for the Virginia Union University women's basketball team. And in 2020, the team from the 1983 was inducted into the NCAA Hall of Fame, Coach Harris's team. VUU would become the first HBCU to win an NCAA women's title. So today, VUU's Thomas Harris Fitness Center is named after him.
Okay. He does sound impressive, and I can understand the legendary piece now, but I'm still left hanging on the tricky bit. What's so tricky?
Notice how it's not called Tricky Fitness Center.
I did notice that. They left it out. Suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were trying to keep it profesh.
I guess.
Just professional.
Just okay.
I will say, can I just say, though, it's just interesting to me, like, what kind of information we find on the parents. Because, I don't know, I'd like to think that it gives some kind of insight to what our ladies, how our ladies were brought up and stuff. So, tricky or not. In this case, Coach Harris, that's what I'm going to call him, Coach Harris, was a beloved coach that would be referred to as the sixth man. So, do any of you guys get that basketball reference?
Not at all.
Well, aren't there like five people playing on court? So is the sixth man like an honorary player?
Okay, so as the basketball fan here, let me explain.
Thank you.
In basketball, it means that it's the most valuable player outside of the starting lineup. So this can, it typically means someone on the sideline that would be like the biggest cheerleader for the rest of the team. They are also generally considered to be just a great team player. So finding this out about her dad after what I had already read about Sylvia, it made total sense to me. So there we are.
I mean, she's teasing us now, right?
Yeah. But also, like, you really like baseball, like you said, right? So I think that would endear him to you.
Let's make sure we say like basketball, though.
Yeah, I like basketball.
Oh, did I say baseball?
Correct.
Yeah.
Because I also like go baseball. Astros.
I was going to say that's what Nerdy likes, but.
Yeah. I like eating at baseball games. I'll say that. Because I do. I like
you get me. You know what I meant. But I see why you're defending him so much.
All right. So finding information on Sylvia, it was a challenge. And well, at least the type of information that I wanted to find out was difficult, right? Like, I don't know her birthday, y'all. Just 1953. That's all I got. And
it happens.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how she was as a kid or her early college days. I don't even know if she played basketball. But, you know, here's why we're talking about her dad instead.
You know what? Been there, done that.
Yeah, I mean, that's like I said, we've had to do that before.
But like you said, it's good when we have a chance to cover more background because sometimes we find a lot of information and we have to gloss all over that. So it's good when we have a chance to talk about it.
Yeah, I found a lot about Virginia basketball. But anyway, so although I couldn't find out much about her childhood, I can only imagine what it would have been like for her to grow up in Virginia in the 1960s. She attended a newly desegregated high school. And okay, so I guess what I should have also mentioned at the beginning was that Sylvia was a Black woman. So she would witness firsthand how social systems would impact people's lives just based off of someone's skin color.
Yeah, wow. I mean, I can't even imagine how hard that must have been. And it reminds me of some of our past ladies like Amasa Lee Meredith from episode 42 and her experience growing up in Virginia several decades before Sylvia.
Yeah.
A story that would come up in my research was how Sylvia's mother would scream outside her car window at the KKK members who were seen demonstrating on the street. Wow. Sylvia would also recall how she would have to dress up just to go shopping in the white-owned downtown department stores.
Wow, that's really terrifying about her mom and the KKK story. Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really scary.
Yep.
I mean, I'm scared to this day.
Right. About, yeah.
Like if I see that on the street, I'd be so scared. I wouldn't even scream. I would hide or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we don't see people with white hoods, but there's still
scary
that
stuff.
Kind of prejudice.
There's still scary stuff out there. Yeah.
It's maddening to think about where we are 2022 in the 1960s. But anyway, that was Sylvia's childhood, firsthand accounts of what the world looks like for her. And okay, so we're going to fast forward because the next bit of information I got was that Sylvia would attend Virginia Commonwealth University and she would get a BFA in Communication, Art and Design with a focus on film and photography. So after graduating in 1975, she would move to Boston, where she would discover graphic design to be her intended career path.
That's interesting.
It is interesting because in Boston, Sylvia would work with architects and in the broadcast media industry. Mm. So in Boston, she would meet Chris Pullman, who was the vice president of WGBH and who would provide the visuals for some of your favorite PBS programs. He would work on the visuals like the title sequences of The Antique Roadshow and Masterpiece Theater.
Lizzie, aren't you a fan of Masterpiece Theater?
Yes, I love their shows. I've mentioned them probably way too many times on this show, but they're so good.
Really? Yeah. I think only once.
Well, but I don't
it
know.
It was really thorough that one time.
I mean, Masterpiece Theater is great. What can I say?
Yeah. Well, what a diverse scene to be working in. Architecture, broadcasting shows how much she can do as a graphic designer.
Yeah, no kidding. I kind of always forget that about graphic designers, but their industry is so versatile. I mean, it can apply to many different disciplines and things like that. So I'm intrigued to hear more about what Sylvia does next.
So Chris Pullman, right, meets Sylvia. He kind of becomes Sylvia's mentor. And he would be actually the one to introduce Sylvia to the world of graphic design, which would also lead Sylvia to study graphic design at Yale University.
Ooh, this just got fancy.
Ivy Leaguer over here.
Yep. All right. So here, her years at Yale is where a lot of my research began. In my readings of her obituaries and personal accounts from her colleagues, it all starts here, right when she's attending Yale. They would say that she was just this tall presence that was active in class discussions about design and typography.
Love learning about women who have a lot to say and have a platform they feel comfortable shining in.
Yeah, and it sounds like she was really into what she was learning about, too, which is great.
Oh, yeah. So after graduating with her master's in graphic design, together with a couple of classmates, Juanita Dugdale and David Gibson, they would start a firm called 212 Associates, named after the building where they attended lectures located on 212 York Street.
What a fun name. That means our company would be like Slocum Associates. Not as fun.
Well, maybe not. Sounds it doesn't serious. Sound too bad. I don't mind it.
Yeah, but none of us are Slocum. Wouldn't that get confusing?
I mean, we just tell people that's what it meant.
What about College Place Associates?
But then we're in college forever?
No.
That's the name of the street.
Yeah, that's the name of the street.
I know, but it like, I don't know.
It
doesn't have the same ring.
I guess it kind of sounds like it came out of Monopoly or something.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess we should stick to She Builds Associates then.
Yeah, we should pick the name we've already picked.
Yeah. All right. So 212 Associates was located in New York. And they would work with major corporations. Sylvia was interested in interactive media and user-centered design. At her firm, they saw, quote, public information design as the focus of our multidisciplinary design practice and believed in the notion of good design for the common good, end quote.
That's a good quote.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I like talking about our earlier discussion of like what graphic design could be. Sure, it could be a lot of things, but I just always associated graphic design with maybe like marketing. Mm-hmm. Like its purpose was maybe to sell something. But for them, they saw it as a way to provide tools and access to places of public life.
I actually associate graphic design with wayfinding because the New York City subway map, it was designed by a graphic designer, if I'm not mistaken. So I always think of that. But really, wayfinding, in essence, is graphic design, just one that's spatial in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. For me, when I think of graphic design, I think of logos. But then I also think about infographics. I love an infographic. They're super important to help give people information in a better way. We should have more of them in our lives. And I guess wayfinding kind of falls within that category. I just had never kind of thought about it that way. But
yes, exactly.
We need them.
Yes, I love infographics too. You know, that's like one of my second career options. Politics, wayfinding, bingo caller. Could do any of those.
You can tie all three in some way, probably. Okay. So what intrigued me the most were some of Sylvia's projects, right? So Sylvia would collaborate with the Citibank ATM design team to create the user interface for the bank's cash machines.
Okay, now that I would not have imagined. That's really cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me neither. See, like, that's the thing. I feel like graphic design, it's just one of those professions that goes a lot of ways, like we were saying before, but like in ways I would never have thought of.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yo, okay. Okay, so get this. So for the first time, these ATM machines, they would address the customers with a personal human voice by asking, "How may I help you?" to begin operation.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, that sounds a little creepy. I mean, if it's on the screen, "How may I help you?" that's nice. But like when you see it on the screen, but if it's a voice coming out of a machine, I would be taken aback by that.
Agreed. Yeah.
You know what it reminds me of? Did you guys ever go to Starbucks and there was a big screen and you could see the teller?
No.
I've seen that for a couple, but that's usually because of like hearing impaired customers.
Well, here for a while, there's still these big screens, but they don't show the teller anymore. But anyway, you could see you know what I mean when I say teller? I don't know what else to call them. But
yeah.
It was really creepy.
The drive-thru.
Yeah, the drive-thru person. And it was so creepy. So when you said that, it reminded me of that.
I understand what you're saying. And for us, it seems shocking. But think of, I don't know. I feel like from what I'm understanding is that before this, ATM machines would just be like, start, begin. Like there was no personal humanizing connection. It was just like, I don't know. I guess it ties well to her like customer service aspect.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, this was early times, like the beginning of the email and the internet. And it's just interesting that like it's Sylvia and her firm that would be the ones to create this more like human centric paradigm shift of interaction between like a user and the computer system. Now we're seeing, I guess, the ends effects that is becoming too. Like now it's like, where does the human and the machine begin and end? Since right. Like machines are listening to us. But anyway, it's interesting.
I mean, when you explain it that way, the implications are really fascinating. Like learning how to humanize this new cool technology.
Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. So Sylvia, she would work with her firm 212 Associates until 1994, when she would start her own practice called Sylvia Harris LLC. And her firm would work to solve design problems for civic agencies, universities, and hospitals.
If I were in the job market, I'd send my resume to Sylvia Harris LLC.
What project are you hoping to work on?
Maybe I could get my voice to come out of some machines. But I would like to work on projects that involve wayfinding in those spaces, civic and university, especially because they're the types of projects that interest me.
Yeah.
Well, interesting enough, Sylvia would be the project leader to develop a design communication with patients for the New York Presbyterian and Columbia University Medical Center.
Design communication like the voice in the ATMs, but in a hospital? That seems even stranger. Like,
yeah. I'm not sure about this.
You can practice nudity. Ding, someone is getting their leg cut off.
Oh my goodness.
No, just kidding.
This escalated. No,
but it's not that. These are two different projects. There's no voices coming out of the hospital or medical center. But to go to our earlier discussion at the hospital, it was more about wayfinding, you know, like how to communicate to help patients navigate the hospital.
Yeah.
So with the ATM machine, it was all about how to enhance and improve the user experience, basically how to improve customer service all around via graphic design.
How the space communicates with people. I really like that.
Exactly. So this project was interesting because it started with they had done like several surveys to the patients and they were finding that patients would get lost trying to get to their appointments, all due to poor signage and wayfinding. Mm.
Of course, wayfinding in hospitals is really important because, yes. I mean, but I can see how the very beginning, it might not have been so clear to them how important it was. And I mean, remember when we talked about episode 31, Lady Florence Nightingale, she was dealing with retrofit hospitals. Like, it was mess.
It was horrible. Yeah, not good. I mean, I'm imagining retrofit hospitals, that's like bad enough, but then figuring out how to get to where you need to go inside of them? Terrible, probably. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like Sylvia's work would make a big difference in those hospitals. Hospitals are confusing, y'all. Like, just...
Yes,
it is.
My gosh.
And I mean, I had a similar experience at my grocery store. Like, they were in the middle of, like, rearranging different aisles. So the cereal was where the pasta was supposed to be. I mean, granted, they had, like, a better plan because they had people, like, stationed at, like, every other aisle just to help me look for the peanut butter.
Yes, wayfinding at the grocery store is also crucial.
Very true. Yes.
Not life-threatening like a hospital, but still, it's important. Okay, so with Sylvia, her process, she had five steps. The very clear five steps in her design process. First, she had assessment and finding the cause of the problem. So like a survey, perhaps. And then second, management. She wanted to make sure that the building was still under control, not chaos. The third was to create a strategy to fix the problem. The fourth was design. And then the last step was implementation, which would include making negotiations for the designs to be approved.
That kind of sounds like the stages of an architecture project. Programming, pre-design, schematic, CD, CA.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so anyway, her other notable projects was the U.S. Census.
What?
Whoa.
Yeah, Sylvia was the creative director behind the design of the 2000 United States Census. The goal was to increase participation, especially among underrepresented populations.
That sounds like a huge project. So I'm assuming she's designing like the forms that get sent out to people, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So after 30 years, the census was in decline. Basically, people were not doing the census. You know, so they were just, it was boring, black and white. Like, I'll show pictures because it's fascinating what it looks like.
The old one or the new one?
The old one. Okay. The old one. Black and white.
I don't remember the new one boring, being all too
like amazing.
Exhilarating.
Well, maybe it's changed after
it
that.
It was online, though, the last time I did it. So.
Oh, really?
Well, they sent you something in the mail to tell you go online and do it, you know?
Oh, that's right, actually. Yeah, yeah.
It's all digitized now, I think. But anyway.
All right. So, well, before it got digital.
Yeah.
Like 30 years or 30 plus years ago now.
20 years ago, you mean?
20 years ago? Oh, I don't know, girl. We're old. I was like, I'm just going to add another 30 years after. anyway, Sylvia's design. It was this newly designed census that would be distributed to 80 million households. Basically, this was giving the Bureau a chance to study how a redesigned form could boost participation and bring public awareness of the census brand.
That is really cool.
Did it work?
Sure did.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned before, I will have the images on our show notes of all of these, or as many projects as I can. But just to see the before and after of what the census looked like and just like Sylvia's stamp on it. Just, you want to fill out that form.
I can't wait. Yeah. I love a good before and after.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So although this is a wild card episode or wild card season, I don't know. I thought it was kind of cool how like a graphic designer could collaborate and influence architects. So like wayfinding is so important in hospital designs. And so that was like the first, like, oh, yeah, okay. This is how Sylvia influenced the architecture field, you know, through wayfinding as a graphic designer. But reading about the census stuff, I think about just how information that you find from a census could be so useful when it comes to, like, urban planning. So to have Sylvia there to really drive the need to get more responses and representation on the census, I just thought it was so great.
Yeah, I think this episode is great to show all the different careers and ways that one can influence the built environment. And that's what we're about, building and construction, the design of space.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, you can definitely see how her work would influence spatial design in different areas.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so some other notable accolades would be that she was a part of the board of AIGA, which stands for the American Institute of Graphic Arts. She also sat on the Citizen Stamp Advisory Committee.
Oh. Way to go, Sylvia.
Woo woo, get them notable accolades.
Yeah. So basically, she helped put people of color on stamps, like mailing stamps. Like, that's what being on the Citizen Stamp Advisory.
I didn't realize that's what that was. That's cool.
Yeah. She just wasn't like collecting stamps or anything.
See, another thing that, like, yeah, obviously, graphic designers are designing stamps, but like,
right?
Not, they're I so don't think cool. about it. They're doing it all, guys.
They look are.
At, yeah. Look at them go.
So, I mean, I had a lot of fun researching Sylvia and figuring out what graphic designers do. But what I liked about Sylvia and her work, though, I think my favorite part was that Sylvia loved to talk to real people. Like, this is a quote from one of her colleagues. She liked to talk to real people to understand what they wanted and needed, to understand how their perceptions impacted or framed something. She, and I think Sylvia did this with like all aspects of her designs or even anything that she was involved with. When it came to like a hospital lobby, to a census form, to a postage stamp, she was really in it.
Yeah. I mean, I love to hear this. I mean, we talked about this with other ladies in past episodes that like really understanding a client's need or a community's need is so important when you're implementing a design that's going to function well and be usable. Like the census or the wayfinding in hospitals, right? And so, like, it's obvious that this was true of Sylvia's work, too.
100%.
Yeah. Okay, so another client that Sylvia had was the Central Park Zoo in New York. So Sylvia, she helped design and redo the different displays to present the information in a more effective way.
She's helping people get information all over. I love
she
it.
She really was.
Spread the knowledge, Sylvia.
Right? I just think it's fun. Like, she's so, think about the zoo. Like, I read those things all the, well, it's not like I go to the zoo all the time.
But sure, when
I go
but to the like, zoo, you gotta find out about the animal, you know?
Right? That's how you know about, like, emus and femurs and whatever. But anyway, outside of working on all these cool projects, Sylvia was also a professor. She taught at her alma mater, Yale. She also taught at the School of Visual Arts, Cooper Union, and Purchase College.
Of course. I would expect nothing less of one of our ladies.
Yep.
I'm glad she found time to teach because people need to learn her ways and keep that ball rolling.
Very true.
Oh, yeah, for sure. She was always about mentoring people. So on top of all this, I also found out that her and other designers would organize the first organization of Black Designers Conference in Chicago, which I think was in 2005.
So cool.
What isn't Sylvia doing?
I mean, for real.
I don't know. But she's just doing a whole bunch of stuff because she would also start this nonprofit called Public Policy Lab, which was an organization committed to the more effective delivery of public services to the American people.
Another place I could send my resume if I need an architecture break.
Yeah, I mean, Public Policy Lab, I feel like I've seen that organization, especially like in D.C. and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, she would also work with architects. Like, she worked on it before she went to grad school, but now as a professional, she would work with architects to talk about a lot of this stuff. But anyway, in 2011, at the age of 57, while on a trip to D.C., Sylvia will pass away suddenly due to heart failure on July 24th.
Oh my gosh. That's so young. 57? Yep. Oh, man, that's so sad. I mean, imagine all the things she could have kept doing.
Yes, that's crazy. Guys, this is a good reminder to take care of your heart. Get that cardio in, do your Zumba, do what you need to do.
Yeah, good cholesterol. Eat your avocados because, I mean, it is sad because her father had also passed away of heart failure, too.
Oh,
so.
No. Listen, family history is no joke. Talk to your doctors, people.
Chibo's podcast PSA. Schedule your yearly checkup today.
Yes.
Mine
is
next month. So.
OK, good.
Get on it.
OK. Yeah. I've been eating avocados and
I was
yoga
supposed to go this week, but my doctor called in sick, so they rescheduled me.
Oh, that's always kind of funny to me when
I know. I was
sick.
Like, oh, ironic. But I also don't want to see her if she's sick. So, you know,
yeah,
rest up.
No. Okay. So, yes, her passing was sudden. And it's not like she had time to document her work or to write her own memoir, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like I mentioned before, a lot of my research came from personal accounts from people that knew her and worked with her.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So it was interesting to get people's like input. She was really well loved. People would say that she had great energy. She was passionate and very intelligent. She was a great mentor and teacher.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it.
I believe it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As a designer and a woman, this quote that I read was that Sylvia Harris always wanted to do the right thing, the smart thing, the thing that would make the biggest difference to the most people. She was the model citizen, a citizen designer. End quote.
What a great title.
Mm.
Yes.
Love it.
And it's great. Actually, before she passed, she had actually changed her firm's name. So instead of it being like Sylvia Harris LLC, it would become Citizen Research and Design.
Ooh.
So similar to some of her previous work, she wanted to push for more human-centered research to influence design. And she would help and consult with organizations and architects and designers. One of the big things was she wanted to ensure that they adopt tools of modern life to promote a better human experience.
That's so cool. I like that. Yeah. Design for Humankind was at the center of her organization and even in the name, right? It wasn't about her, mm-hmm. but it's about the community that they're serving through their work.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So now we have reached the second half of the episode, The Caryatid. Nerjity, can you remind our listeners what a caryatid is?
I can. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek or Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid, a woman who is working today, furthering the profession through their work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode.
All right. So this week's caryatid goes to... Amanda Williams!
Whee! Amanda!
Okay, can I just say, after 7 seasons, I wish we had a sound effect to do this, but I have fun making our own
drum
rolls.
But I like making our own drum rolls.
Yeah, this is it.
Yeah. It's just, you know, you'd think we'd have something by then, but we can't find anything better.
Exactly.
I like adding my chicka ah at the end.
Okay, so Amanda Williams. I'm actually surprised that we hadn't picked Amanda, and honestly, I was almost hesitant to pick her because I thought we might have actually made her a caryatid a few seasons back. But anyway, Amanda Williams, she is an artist and architect. She is represented by the Rona Hoffman Gallery in Chicago. Amanda got her architecture degree from Cornell University with an emphasis on fine arts. Amanda's work consists of a series of exhibitions, installations, sculptures, you name it. On the gallery website, it says that Amanda's work seeks to inspire new ways of looking at the familiar and in the process raise questions about the state of urban space and ownership in America.
Wow, that sounds really interesting. I'm really intrigued to see her artwork and how she goes about accomplishing that through the artwork.
Right? Because that's a lot.
I know. That's a lot to put on artwork.
Yeah.
It does, but she does it so well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been following her work for years. Like, that's why I thought we had talked about it, because I could have sworn I included her somewhere, but maybe it was just in my dream of interviews. Because, okay. Let me just explain a couple of her projects. One of her projects that stood out to me. First of all, Amanda was in the Venice Biennale in 2018. She would work alongside other Americans to install a piece called Thrival Geographies. In my mind, I see a line. This installation was located at the U.S. Pavilion Courtyard. So I don't know. I want to say that she might have been the first African-American woman to participate in the Venice Biennale, but I'm not 100% sure. I do remember it being pretty monumental that she was there.
We're starting rumors.
I know, right?
No.
Unconfirmed.
I don't think it's a rumor, though.
Allegedly.
I'm like 90% sure. Okay. But anyway, even if that's not true, just the fact that she was in the Venice Biennale.
Yeah,
to me, it's impressive. Makes my little heart sing. And then also, I mean, Amanda, she has had exhibitions at the MoMA in New York, the Museum of Contemporary Art in Chicago. She is also on the museum design team for the Obama Presidential Library Center in Chicago. I don't know. Her work just reminds me of Sylvia a little bit because I think they're both bringing these important conversations to the table, but in their own way and like through their version of design, whether it was wayfinding at a zoo or a conversation about immigration in Venice.
Yeah, I can see a connection between the two of them, just like how they're using these different mediums in order to raise specific issues and topics, like you were saying.
Exactly. Okay, so another thing that I forgot to mention, well, it's actually, you know, probably the biggest thing to happen to Amanda in her life just this year in 2022. Amanda was awarded the MacArthur Genius Grant.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Hold the phone. I mean, this award or a grant recognizes society-changing people whose work offers inspiration and insight.
Mm,
this amazing. Is really cool. It is.
It is.
I learned about it. Have you guys read Grit?
I haven't. A little bit. I don't think I actually read it, but yeah.
It's a really good book. I really liked it. And the lady that wrote it won this grant. So that's how I know about it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she did. Duckworth was her last name.
Angela Duckworth.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's pretty cool. She also gets a lot of money throughout the year, like in the span of like a couple of years.
Well, to do good things.
To do good things, even though they don't monitor what they do, like how they spend their money, like they don't have to report how they spend
it. Are we now critiquing the MacArthur Genius Grant?
No, that's neither here or there. I just know that Amanda's going to do cool things with it because she seems like a cool person. So I'm just saying, as I was reading it, it's like they get a lot of money. But anyway, here we are. We're at the end of our episode. But before we sign off, we want to give thanks to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical producer. And most of all, we want to thank you for listening and coming back for season 7. We hope you enjoyed learning more about Sylvia and Amanda, along with our banter, and that you're inspired to find out more about them and our other amazing ladies. So again, thank you.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you've enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, your wayfinders, your graphic designers, your infographicers, your artists, your MacArthur Genius Grants awardees. Tell everybody, tell them to give us 5 stars on iTunes and on Spotify. Write us a review. This all helps us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about these amazing ladies with us.
We're excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about women bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at shebuildspodcast@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our website, shebuildspodcast.com. Or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at She Builds Podcast and on Twitter at She Builds Pod. Until next time, bye. Amanda was in the Venice Biennale in 2018. Pause for effect. Venice, you know, the Venice Biennale.
But maybe say Venice instead of Venus.
I did say that wrong.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It didn't even sound weird.
Yeah, Venus.
The Venus.
I'm your fire.
I'm your fire.
Desire.
I've mentioned it to my family, but in terms of telling people like, oh yeah, we're doing this, I'm looking for projects. You got anything? I'm not there yet because it scares the shit out of me.
Dreaming of launching your own architecture firm? Well, buckle up for a wild ride with Emerging, the podcast that shares what it's really like to start an architecture firm.
Where do we begin? We don't even know what type of business to formalize as. Is it an LLC? Is it an LLP? Like, how are taxes? I mean, the list is astronomical.
Season 1 featured founders Jeffrey, Lexi, and Chris owners of Level Studio Architecture, are your fearless guides on this unfiltered journey from napkin sketches to a thriving studio.
One evening, stumbled into one last dive, we sat at the bar and pondered our postgraduate futures. Amidst the conversation, a napkin became the canvas for our aspirations, sketching plans and milestones, sealing our heartfelt commitment and shared dreams.
In drawing down dreams on a napkin collectively, that then, you know, in your head, you've rooted like, oh, I'm connected to these people, like long term.
The process of starting an architecture practice brims with excitement and challenges, demanding meticulous planning, flawless execution, and unyielding resilience.
I kind of hate the term because it's so overly used, but I think everybody knows imposter syndrome. And I think it's so real to this day. I don't know if it's with everybody, but with me, I'm always questioning like, us, can we do this? Are we ready to do this? Are we prepared? Can we do it?
Did we just decide a name?
We did it, guys.
Oh my
God. The one that came out of nowhere.
Woo!
It came out of nowhere. I liked it. I saw it.
Ready to turn your aspirations into reality? Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Emerging and chart your own path to architectural success.